Where? Where listeners go to get their money mind right so their wealth and happiness will follow. I am she, Heather Wagenhals, your hostess with the financial mostest, your purveyor of prosperity. And welcome to today's very special Atlas Shrugged Part 2 edition of Unlock Your Wealth Radio as we celebrate the grand opening of the movie Atlas Shrugged Part 2 nationwide in theaters today. And to help me celebrate the release of the new motion picture, I have the executive director of the Atlas Society, David Kelly, joining me to talk about objectivism and the power and importance of the book and what it means to us as a society and how you can actually get involved and incorporate objectivism into your everyday life. In addition to it being the Atlas Shrugged edition, we also have our second key in our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series, and today it is Take Action, Make Assessment. And we are going to learn how to go green, if you will, and make an organic assessment of our finances. We'll also learn why it's important to organically assess your finances versus just creating a budget and seeing what comes in and what's going out, because that really doesn't give us the tools we need to make lasting change in our financial lives. And as you know, those of you who have listened regularly, we have our seventh key, which is Break the Budget, which this key prepares us for. And because on the show we liken budgeting with dieting as something you go on to and off of, instead, we learn how to create a healthy savings and spending plan. So if you want to have a little piece of financial chocolate cake, it won't go straight to your fanny. And we'll learn how to overcome those things. But first, in order to do that, we must make an assessment of our finances. And it's not simply what's going in and out. And we're going to learn that later on coming up on the show. I must proceed, though, to David Kelly because I do want to spend a tremendous amount of time with him today. We are so fortunate to have him as a part of the show. And David Kelly, in addition to being the founder of the Atlas Society and the executive director, he is a professional philosopher, a teacher, and a writer. After earning his PhD in philosophy from Princeton in 75, he joined the philosophy department of Vassar College, where he remained until 1984. He has also taught at Brandeis University as a visiting lecturer. And among his books are Unrugged Individualism, The Selfish Basis of Benevolence, The Contested Legacy of Ayn Rand, The Evidence of the Senses, A Treaty on Epistemology, and The Art of Reasoning, one of the most widely used logic textbooks in the country. With Roger Donway, he co-authored Laissez-Faire Parler, Freedom in the Electronic Media, A Critique of Government Regulation. He is also the author of A Life of One's Own, Individual Rights and the Welfare State. It's a critique of the moral premises of the welfare state and a defense of private alternatives that preserve individual autonomy, responsibility, and dignity. He is an amazing man. I am fortunate to call him a personal friend. And he consulted heavily on Atlas Shrugged Part 1 as well as Part 2, which we will talk about today. And let's get started, shall we? Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you, Heather. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad to have you on the show, and I'm so excited for Atlas and the whole incredible event that's going to be taking place today with the national release, bigger than number one. So I can't begin to share with you how enthusiastic I am about this weekend.
Well, good. I'm certainly excited too. I've worked with the producers. I've seen the film. I think it's a terrific film adaptation of Atlas Shrugged. And I know it's going to open in a larger number of theaters, 850 at least, at the last count I got, probably more by now, all over the country. And there's an awful lot of excitement that I'm getting. I'm coming in through email and calls and everything.
I bet you're swamped by it. All of our regular listeners hear me talk about, you know, the importance of objectivist thinking and how impactful Ayn Rand was on my life when I read Atlas Shrugged, which was my first work of hers that I read. And then I went to read The Virtues of Selfishness. But for our newer listeners who aren't real familiar with objectivism or Atlas Shrugged or the movie project, can you give us a brief introduction of what this means, what objectivism and specifically the book means to folks?
Certainly. Atlas Shrugged was Ayn Rand's final novel, really her masterpiece. It was published in 1957. Ayn Rand considered herself first and foremost a novelist. She wanted to create art. She wanted to create stories about people and events that she could, that she wanted to see and wanted to contemplate. But she had a very exalted view of human nature and its potential. And in developing her image of the ideal, she had began to think it through philosophically, and she actually devoted a considerable amount of time to philosophical thought, developing ideas on ethics and on the nature of knowledge, man's place in the world, and the political philosophy, the relationship with between the individual and society. And she was a very systematic thinker and developed these ideas into a philosophical framework she called objectivism. It's in some ways a complex body of knowledge, but the essence of it is, I can distill, I would say, in really just 4 points. One is, she believed in reason as an absolute, that your mind is your guide to reality. Your ability to think logically and on the basis of empirical evidence, the evidence of the senses, it's the only source of knowledge we have, and it is powerful. We actually do have knowledge. You know, she was not a skeptic in any way. Secondly, she believed that individuals, she believed in the principle of individualism, which means that we live as individuals. Yes, we're social animals, but our society is made of individuals, and we each need to make our own choices, make our own assessments of what to believe, and we need to take care of our own lives and happiness first. That's what really depends on our action, and it's what our actions should aim at, including, of course, within that, all the relationships that can add to the beauty and the rewards of a life. And thirdly, she felt that the central activity of a good human life is achievement, producing, creating value. So in her novels, and especially in Atlas Shrugged, the heroes are people in business, primarily, who are, you know, Dagny Taggart, who's a railroad executive running a railroad, Hank Reardon, who is a steelmaker and invents a new metal, and many, many other people who love their work, are passionate about it, and are working for rewards, they want to be paid, but it's really the meaning of the work of creating value that resonates with them. So achievement is the third focus. And as a consequence of all this, she was a believer in limited government, individual rights, and a capitalist, essentially a free economy, as the way in which individuals pursuing achievement and interacting with each other voluntarily can best survive. So reason, individualism, achievement, and liberty, including economic liberty. Those are the main points of objectivism.
I think that that was so brilliantly and succinctly put. And those are probably the four guiding values that I hold or that I was able to glean from reading Atlas Shrugged. And I always share with my listeners when we get to the 13th key, you know, become a voracious reader. And Atlas Shrugged is my Stephen Covey's Sharpen the Saw. So once a year, at the beginning of every year, I read that for my inspiration. And then if I get stuck somewhere along the way with being able to make those choices on behalf of myself, because we have so many around us that try to make us feel guilty for our achievement or that we shouldn't enjoy our success and that you have to be selfless and altruistic. Every time I start losing that sense of purpose and perspective, I always grab the book again.
Understandably. And Heather, I think you're bringing out a dimension of what objectivism is that's very important. And that is, it's not just a whole bunch of ideas or a body of ideas. It is that. It is a philosophy. And as I'm a philosopher by training, I taught philosophy. And objectivism is of great interest to me in that way. But it is also a way of life. It is a framework that many people have adopted. It's a secular framework for people who are not believers in a higher power or afterlife, still need a way of seeing how they fit into the world and a way of guiding their choices and making decisions about what should I do, what should I live for. And so there are many people in who have embraced objectivism in that way. And they find inspiration, as you were just describing very, very nicely, from Atlas Shrugged and from Rand's other books as well.
It gave me a code of ethics and an example to hold myself accountable to as a business person and an entrepreneur. And I think that the expression trading my best efforts for the best efforts of others sums it up.
Exactly. And that is very close to a line of dialogue in the movie, in part two, which you will be seeing.
Yes, it is, which I was so excited. I'm like, oh, yes. As I've been revisiting it, I shared with the audience last week that I had just finished part one to get caught back up as to where part two started, and I'm finishing part two now, so I'm getting close to the end before I get to go see the movie. So I'm energized and vitalized by the book. How is life different for a person once they've been exposed to and embrace the concepts of objectivism?
It's hard to say because everyone reacts to it in a slightly different way and brings to it different aspects of personality and character. I think in general, what I've heard most often is people saying they read Atlas Shrugged and it put into words what they'd always believed. And what that really means is not that they had a fully formed philosophy that Ayn Rand happened to come up with at the same time, but rather that she was putting into words a broad sense about life and it, in a way that resonated. So people, I think what that means is they're coming to the book. They bring to the book their own sense of that life is worth something, that I should try for something, I should make something of my life, that I should use my hip mind, et cetera, and et cetera. What I think people get when they become familiar with objectivism is a clearer sense of what it means to pursue your self-interest. And a clearer sense of what, for example, in dealing with other people, what things are really required in, if you're going to be a just and fair person. Some things are pretty obvious, like, you make a promise, you keep it. Some things are not so obvious, especially in complicated, environments like a business or a community or family, for that matter. And so they acquire better tools for thinking that through and adjudicating between what others can reasonably ask of them and what they must insist on for themselves, between being better able to distinguish between helping others in a benevolent way and helping others out of some guilt, some altruistic guilt, as you were referring to.
Perspectives that I discerned applies to the invisible hand theory of economics. By pursuing my own best interest, I help others.
Well, yes. Ayn Rand is so clear about why free exchange, free economic freedom, capitalism, whatever you want to call it, she's so clear about why that is a system that works. If that not only works, but is good. And those two things are connected for her. It works because it allows people to do what they need to do, and which is good. Atlas Shrugged is an amazing story of what happens when that system gets corroded and oppressed by government power and crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's a big learning curve for a lot of people.
And it's interesting too, because what she kind of was foreboding, we're experiencing a lot of that in today's world. Almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Over the last 4 years, for sure. So, you know, if you think back 4 years to 2008 and the financial collapse and the sort of panic reaction of what government did, both beginning under Bush and then under President Obama, there are so many similarities and parallels with things that happened that Ayn Rand described in her novel. It was all fiction, and it was 57 years ago now. But it is it's almost eerie how similar the economic decline and the growth of government corruption mirrors things that we see today. We see one of the things she talks about is how government introduces one regulation. It has bad effects. So then they say, okay, we have to have another regulation to fix those. And that has its own bad effects, and it cascades. There are many examples of that in Alice, and we see a lot of that today. where for example, in healthcare, every new regulation that is imposed has unintended consequences. And so government has to do something new, and the role of government in health over decades has been just snowballing in that way. And another aspect that is quite spooky is that people, we in America have the rule of law, that you have a law and it's got to be something that is passed by a legislature and it is clearly stated, and you can know what the law is going to be before you are subject to it. We now have regulators, we now have Congress passing laws that just give blanket power to regulators to write regulations, and no one knows what they're going to be doing in finance or in healthcare or other fields, whether it's going to be legal or not, because the regulators just tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have any controls on them. So it's for that reason, sales of this book have soared. I mean, in some of these years, it's over 500,000. 500,000. I mean, that's bestseller level for a book that's 57 years old. It's just an astounding.
Agreed. And it's amazing how many people, it doesn't matter where I am. I could be, at a racetrack with my husband, and I could be talking with other people in a completely different industry, and then I make a mention of, oh, well, blah, blah, blah is the Hank Reardon of this particular industry. And somebody will be like, Atlas Shrugged. And all of a sudden I have this connection to another human being that maybe I had just been introduced, and it's a social, superficial acquaintance type relationship, that automatically by just that Atlas Shrugged comment completely cements this understanding with this person, that I've just taken my relationship in two words, or the title of the book, and have taken and gone from a level one to like a level seven relationship with this person instantly, because they're connecting to the same principles in their own way that I'm connected to. And it just creates this web of understanding and empowerment, because when someone sees things through a similar lens like you do, all of a sudden things become clear and are understood, and they don't have to be outwardly stated, but you have this connection, and now that strengthens your bond, which then empowers you, because now you feel like, oh, somebody gets me.
Yeah.
this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the ex from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
And I think that that's probably the most powerful thing that Atlas has given me. You know, and I've always shared with my audience that the first time I read it, I was 11. I was kind of a bookworm. And so my teachers were giving me thicker books to read, and Atlas just looked interesting.
Wow.
And
you are precocious, Heather.
Yeah. Anytime an Atlas conversation gets started, the first thing I say is, I am Dagny, except I didn't have the rich grandpa that left me the railroad, but I'm Dagny. And as people like progress and get to know me, and then they're like, you know what? You totally are. The way you make decisions, you embody her as a business professional and as an individual. And I think that that's like one of the coolest compliments that I could ever get, because, you know, because I've read the book so many times, and it's had such a profound effect on who I am and how I think, and it guides me every day. You know, it's my guiding principle every day.
Well, that's a great analogy, and it is a compliment. Dagny is a wonderful character. She's probably the strongest female character in literature, and one of the strongest female roles in a film adaptation that anyone could of any book that anyone could have. I mean, she's just.
She's the deal.
Yeah, she's the real thing. And the fact that she is the one who actually runs the railroad, as even though she's a chief operating officer, Whereas her brother, who's just a kind of crony capitalist worm, he has the title of a president, but
He's just the pretty boy on the paper.
Right. And the actor playing him in part two captures that so wonderfully.
So let's talk about the movie, because that's what I'm getting all jazzed up for. And
Great. This
is an adaptation. So it doesn't occur like at the turn of the century when railroad and all of that stuff is super powerful and important. But it's actually set in a different time period. Can you share a little bit about what, you know, moviegoers will have an opportunity to see?
Sure. The movie was set in what Ayn Rand called the day after tomorrow, a perpetual day after tomorrow, just slightly ahead of us in time. That's what she intended in 1957 when she wrote it. And that still carries through to today in interesting ways, because on the one hand, you have railroads as a primary means of transportation, in an economy that is crumbling. Air traffic has just become too expensive and unreliable. Trains are an old, very old form of transportation. But on the other hand, you have a motor that they're trying to get to work that is an astounding new creation. They don't know who created it, but it clearly takes static electricity from the atmosphere and reduces it to usable power. And that's almost science fiction. So there's
in today's world, it's pretty science fiction, let alone back when Ayn was thinking of it.
Exactly, yeah. The producers creating the adaptation, and this is the same producers brought out part one and part two, although all the other people are different, the cast, the director, pretty much everyone on the team. The producers wanted to tie it a little more closely to our world, and so what you'll see in the film is, a price of gasoline that's gone through the roof, decline in cities, but you also see some little things that will look like Occupy Wall Street and some things that look like Tea Party rallies as people are reacting to the economic and political changes happening around them and surrounding the characters who are the leads, the protagonists in the film. So it's set, actually part one was set, dated as 2016. It came out in 2011, April 15th, 2011 was its opening weekend. And this one is not dated, just sometime in the near future. But as I was saying before, the story is, although this is part two, and it does, if you've seen part one, this carries the story forward. And that's great. But if you haven't seen part one, I wouldn't keep that. I don't think you should stay away from the theater. I know something about the level of work that the screenwriters and directors put into making this a self-explanatory and movie that can be enjoyed. It's a right on some terms. It's a story of Dagny Taggart in the trying to keep her business alive in. Through this onslaught of government regulations that are both directly imposed on her and limit her ability, and also that are causing economic problems that she then has to deal with. And similarly with Hank Reardon, the steelmaker, as they try to solve the two mysteries, one is who created this motor and how could such a brilliant mind have just disappeared? And the second mystery is a lot of other people are disappearing too, highly productive people, brilliant people. Why? Where are they going? Why are they leaving their work that they loved and cared about? Why are they just up and vanishing? So it's a mystery story, and it's got a great climax.
I'm excited. And I find it interesting that it's, at this particular time, how the weather is changing. And so we've got all of these interesting pieces to the puzzle that are playing out in our current world with this upcoming election and how this, you know, part two is going to fit in, because it's a, you know, it really conveys the struggle, I think, and we really get to see Dagny have to really garner her resolve to continue to go, and I think that that's going to be exciting to see how the producers have put that into part two and to the movie adaptation.
Well, it is. It was a deliberate part of their planning that they wanted to bring this out before the election. The producers themselves and some of the investors who put up some of the capital for the film. And it's not that there's any agreement necessarily on anyone's part or attempt to favor one candidate over another. But what this movie does is highlight the issues about individual freedom versus government power. The issues about what money is and the difference between, you know, people who make it honestly and people who take it through either through government power or through, you know, kind of crony capitalist connection with government. And those are the issues that we're talking about in this election.
Agreed, because we have seen such a tremendous decline in our quality of life and such an increase in the amount of regulation that it's making it almost impossible for us to function. And, you know, I can't remember what section in the book it is or who is speaking, but when they say, well, you know, we don't expect, we make all these laws expecting people to break them so they can then manipulate the system. And you're just like, what?
Yeah,
stupid.
That's a line from a character named Floyd Ferris, who works for something called the State Science Institute.
Right.
And it's giving voice to a very cynical point about how sometimes politics works, that you create laws in order that you have, you know, you have so many laws that everyone breaks some law somehow, and then you can always be caught or prosecuted on something. And that, again, another little spoiler, not a very big spoiler that I'll give away, is that that line is also in part two.
Oh, good. So, yay. I'm so excited. I'm climbing out of my skin. You don't even know. I'm not even sleeping. I'm just thinking about this. I'm reading the book like every day. I'm, you know, coming in and out of my business meetings, and half of the time I don't even think I've done business. I think I've just promoted the movie.
Yes, right.
By the time I'm done, I'm like, did I even talk about what I was supposed to when I came here? Because I'm just so wound up about this. So here's like a bigger picture kind of question for you. Why is protecting and promoting the ideals of Atlas Shrugged so important?
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Well, for me, it's important in both a political sense and in a personal way. And politically, I think Ayn Rand understood how a free society works and what the dangers to a free society are. She understood those things so deeply, so profoundly, that I'm passionately believe in freedom, and I want people to read Ayn Rand, become familiar with the ideas as much as possible, because she said it best on almost every issue. The personal meaning is that I think I know so many people who have told me, you know, I read Atlas Shrugged and it just liberated me. It liberated me to you know, shoot for the stars, to go after the dream I'd always had, and not to be limited by what other people expect or what other people might want, but what do I fundamentally care about? What would I like to be able to say at the end of my life that I achieved? And she is so, again, so passionate about that and so clear about the dynamic, the psychological dynamic and the motivations of that, that I think people are better and happier for these ideas. So that's certainly true for me personally, and I want to bring that message to as many people as I can.
Well, she grew up in communist Russia, and so she saw firsthand like the dystopian society that communism creates and that collectivist mentality.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. For those of you listeners who may not know, Ayn Rand was born in St. Petersburg, Russia in 1905 under the Tsars. And so she was 12 when Lenin took power. Her family were, her father was a pharmacist. It was one of the few professions that Jews were allowed to practice under the Tsars at that time. And however, the Lenin and the Bolsheviks seized the family business, put them out of business, seized their home, and they lived in poverty from that point on until Ayn Rand was able to flee the country and come to America, and then became a writer, first for the in Hollywood as a screenwriter, and then writing her novels. And so she certainly did know firsthand what collectivism was like. I mean, I don't think any of us can really imagine.
I think that's something that, you know, we get hung up in the whole holy war issues that have been going along in the Middle East and in Africa. And I think that people focus more on that than understanding that this is the plight of the individuals who just want to live freely and are tired of oppression. And I think that reading this really conveys the value, especially to us Americans who have totally taken it for granted because we've always been free and not really understood its value.
Yes. I think that's a point that I make it over and over again. When Ayn Rand came to America, she came because she loved America and she loved the American spirit, which was very real. But she also realized quickly that Americans are too innocent and didn't understand what vicious evil collectivism breeds. And they were, you know, she heard many times too often about that communism was a noble ideal, even if it didn't work. She said, no, it is not a noble ideal. It is a tool of oppression.
Yes, and for those who embrace Atlas or the ideas of objectivism or want to learn more, you are the executive director of the Atlas Society. Can you tell us what the Atlas Society offers for those of us who are interested in becoming a man of reason, understanding and appreciating what it is that we have in our political and professional freedoms here?
I'd be delighted to, Heather. Thank you for asking. The Atlas Society is a nonprofit organization that I founded in 1990. And we have attracted a following of people who are interested in learning more about the ideas and in helping us promote them. We're funded by individual contributions from people who basically want us to do a work the work of spreading the ideas that that we're experts at. What we offer is first and foremost, I would say, is our website. We have thousands of pages of articles that are organized under different headings, articles about the philosophy of objectivism, the applications of objectivism to personal life, about Atlas Shrugged and the novel as a novel, about the movie. We've been, because of our expertise, we've been involved in working with the producers on. I myself have been a consultant primarily on the script for both parts one and part two. So I would urge people, first of all, who are interested in following up, our website is atlassociety.org. And what you'll find there are sections on all the different aspects of objectivism. We have an entire section on just on Atlas Shrugged, including news and information about the films. So that would be a place to start. And we also put on events during the year. We are our major annual event is called the Atlas Summit. It's typically in the early summer. We put together a program over 3-4 days, sometimes a bit longer, of lectures, performances, social events, and just for people to come and be part of a community, and you know, for all our digital nature and of our society and the way we interact through the internet and so forth, there's something about face-to-face interaction that is irreplaceable, and so that's what we offer, along with the great content in terms of education. We also, on our website, we regularly publish commentaries about political events, other cultural events, applying an objectivist perspective to what's happening in the world around us. And we produce books and that we make available. We sell as books, e-publications, for example, on our available through our website, through Amazon and other places.
And I agree with you. I think if folks do not take advantage of the Atlas Summit or any of the events that you guys sponsor throughout the year, that the website and all of your publications give folks the tools to understand objectivism, but they show how it applies in everyday life, how they can make it relevant to them. And then when you view the news, if you will, through the objectivist slant, when you get to read those articles and opinion papers through the lens of objectivism, it gives you a better understanding of what's really going on, or at least how to interpret it, because sometimes we get confused with the talking heads on all of the different news stations, and it's such a wonderful resource. And part of why I'm a sponsor level member, because it's so important to me to protect and promote this message of objectivism because of how it's so materially affected my life. I mean, I am who I am today because of Dagny and because of the work that Ayn Rand took the time to do. And I'm so eternally grateful, and it's such an honor and a privilege to be a part of this organization. So, if folks want to, the movie has a separate website now, doesn't it?
Yes. Their website is atlasshruggedmovie.com.
Okay. And can they link over from the atlassociety.org?
Yes. If they come to our site, they all they need to do is look for the tab at the top of our site. It says Atlas Shrugged. And there you'll see links to the movie. You'll see our articles about the movie and a news blog about what's happening with the movie. A lot of what we blog about is, hey, the producers are just announced something really cool, and we link to their site.
Awesome. Well, it's been such a privilege and an honor to have our conversation today, knowing all that's going on behind the scenes for you in preparation for the movie release today. And I'm so grateful to have had you take your time out to share with our listeners a bit about objectivism and what the Atlas Society has to offer.
Heather, thank you so much for having me on, and for your support, both for our work in all the different ways you have. You've been a great supporter, and I want to urge all the listeners who want to learn more to get in touch.
Outstanding. And for those of you driving around without a pencil, never fear. UnlockYourWealthRadio.com is here, where you can surf over to David Kelly's show page, find links to the Atlas Society and the Atlas Shrugged movie. Be sure to visit that website, so you can go to the flick today and be a part of our objectivist community. Stay tuned. We still have the Keys to Riches coming up on this very special Atlas Shrugged Part 2 edition of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back with more coming up after this.
Stay tuned for Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches right after this.
Yes, it is that moment you have all been waiting for. It is our Keys to Riches segment on this week's Atlas Shrugged Part 2 special edition of Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And I'm so excited to David Kelly for joining us. Thanks so much for being a part of our show. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money. It also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, eliminate debt, save and invest, building wealth holistically, while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that 1 week at a time, one key at a time on our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series segment. And this week's key is our second key in the Keys to Riches, take action, make assessment. So we are going green just like money is the root of all good, says Francisco D'Anconia from Atlas Shrugged in the movie. You'll be so excited. I'm giving you reasons to go. So because money is the root of all good, and because we must be financially fluent, not just financially literate, but it is our obligation, if we become objectivists and if we take personal responsibility for our freedom, because with freedom comes responsibility, we must then become financially fluent. It's one thing to know the English language and be able to speak it. It's another to become fluent. And to give you an idea of what being fluent is, when you communicate with someone and you are trying to persuade them to your way of thinking, to your desires, where you want to go to eat for lunch or dinner, what vacations you want to take, you have to communicate in such a way that these people understand and agree with you. And communication is not about getting your point across, but eliciting the right result. And if you're eliciting the right result, you are communicating fluently and you're connecting to people. So how do we determine if we're financially fluent? Well, all we have to do is open up our wallets to find out. So when you look in that wallet, you see those bank statements, you see those credit card statements. Are there moths wafting from the folds of your wallet? Are your credit card balances hanging over from the last month to the next month ad infinitum? What about your savings and investments? Or do you not even have those types of statements because you haven't started in that direction? Well, that tells you how fluent or not you are, financially speaking. Yes, we know what money is. Yes, we know how to use it. We know what credit is. We know how to use it. But are we fluent? Are we effectively creating our financial goals? And our fluency financially is determined by where we are. So take a look. Are you happy where you are? Or do you need some help? Well, never fear. UnlockYourWealthRadio.com is here to help get you there with this week's key. And take action, make assessment by understanding our obligation to our finances and by taking responsibility for that, which obligation and responsibility are two different things. It is our obligation to become financially fluent. We meet that obligation through our ability to respond, hence the roots of responsibility. So we meet that with our ability to respond. And if we are not functioning responsibly, if our ability to respond is impaired, so too will our results be impaired. So what we need to do in order to get where we want to go, first we have to take a look at where we are spending, because we spend in cycles. We spend differently at the beginning of the month when rent is due and our mortgage is due versus the end of the month. And we spend differently at the beginning of the paycheck when we're flush with cash versus the end of the paycheck where we have no more cash left, or perhaps we have started borrowing. And it's never about how much we're spending. And it's not about how big ticket or little ticket the items that we're spending on. It's the little things that can take us down. And so what it is that we need to think about when we're spending is we have to analyze and ask two questions. Now, you're not asking them today because this is part of the break the budget. And the reason why we do an organic assessment and we go green, as we say, is because we're looking for something different. We're not looking for the how much. We're looking for the when and the why. And then the how to change becomes obvious for us. So what we need to do is focus on how to perform this assessment. So simply, all we're going to do is get a big 9x12 type manila envelope or more, depending on how prolific a spender we are, and we're going to save receipts. We're going to save all of our bank statements, all of our credit card statements, shove that in there. But particularly, we're also going to track our cash expenditures. Every time you spend cash and don't get a receipt for it, like you give the kids money to go to the mall or their allowance is paid in cash, you need to create a receipt for that. If you go to a vending machine and buy a newspaper or a soda or some sort of candy or something, you need to track that too. What's going to happen by the time we get to break the budget, because I like it, budgeting and dieting as something you go on to and off of, you'll find out that you'll save money and lose weight at the same time. It's so fabulous. So what we're going to do is we're just going to save these envelopes. We're going to create receipts, and we're going to leave this off of our conscious mind as best we can. Now, just by undertaking this event, it's going to pop it up on our reticular activating system. And so we're going to start paying attention to it. And that's natural, but we don't want to analyze anything. We're going to leave these things alone. No peeking, no counting, no listing, no writing out of things, none of that. We just want to stuff them in the envelope because we don't want to influence what happens once it starts popping up on the reticular activating system. We're going to do this for 6 weeks because that gives us two pay periods and a beginning of the month and an end of the month at least once. And that's the point of all of this, because we want to make this organic assessment. One of the things that my friend Marty always says is that we buy on emotion and justify with reason and logic later on. So in order for us to become an objectivist, a man of reason, the ideal that Ayn Rand set forth, we have to stay emotional or stay unemotional about our expenditures. And this is what we're going to learn in the keys to come. Because we have to be able to get to that third brain, and we emote before we reason. And that is the challenge that we have to learn how to overcome. And in the next coming weeks through the rest of the keys until we get to the break the budget keys, you will see that. So all your homework assignment is to begin performing the assessment, begin saving these receipts for the next 6 weeks, and listen to the radio show each and every week. Tune in, download the worksheets from our keys, from the website at unlockyourwealthradio.com, and stay focused on what it is that we truly desire, and that is to become financially fluent. So that's it for this week's key in our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series, Take Action, Make Assessment. For our nuts and bolts for this week's key, our key statement is, in order for me to achieve my goals, I must take action and assess where I am starting from so I can create a specific plan to get there. Our key affirmation is, I am successful at assessing my current financial state. This week's key commitment is, I commit to taking consistent action every day to build and manage wealth successfully. And your key action item is to get a large 9x12 envelope and start collecting your receipts. And remember that we are only collecting receipts and listening to the radio show at unlockyourwealthradio.com. We will avoid looking at them. We will avoid passing any judgment. And we're just going to continue along our current path for just a short while longer for the next 6 weeks until we get to key 7, where we learn how to effectively break our budget and create a healthy savings and spending plan, which will allow us to have that little piece of financial chocolate cake and not have it go to our fannies. That's going to be the exciting part of getting to key 7. I want to thank you so much for joining us and visiting unlockyourwealthradio.com and learning about this week's key. And I want to thank my special guest and dear friend, David Kelly, the executive director from the Atlas Society, of being a part of this show and having me a part of the premiere for Atlas Shrugged Part 2, the film. Please visit their website at atlassociety.org for more information about the Atlas Society, how to become a member, and to find out where Atlas Shrugged Part 2 is playing at a theater near you. I'm Heather Wagenhall saying thanks so much for joining us and tuning in where listeners go so you can learn how to get your money mind right so your wealth and happiness will follow at www.unlockyourwealthradio.com. I'm Heather Wagenhall saying thanks for joining us, and you go out and make it a prosperous day.